Welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Walnut Grovecast needs your support, so please head over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast to find out what cool stuff you get for as little as 17 cents a day. Yes, only 17 cents a day gets you some amazing stuff. Thank you so much for your support. Hi, this is Mark, and you are listening to Walnut Grovecast. I have to turn it on a lot more. I'm sorry. Today I have a very special guest. He's an artist. I think I can describe you as a multidimensional artist. I would like to welcome to the show today, Reed Cipher. How are you, Reed?
Good. How's it going?
It's going great, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. The reason why we're speaking today is because some of the artwork that you sell, that you create, that you focus on, and not all of it, but some of it, has a lean towards an inspiration from our favorite TV show from the 1970s and 80s, Little House on the Prairie.
Definitely.
And I really didn't know what to expect. I was saying this to you. I didn't know if it was going to be just sketches or something. And when I took a closer look at them, I thought, I don't know. I think that they're very thought-provoking. I think that they're emotional. And I just think that, all in all, they're very unique.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I mean, if you would like to, you know, talk about what you do and how long you've done it, and, you know, I'll pass the torch to you.
Okay. Well, the genesis of my adult artwork relationship with Little House on the Prairie is I was actually at a point where I sort of had, like, artist version of artist block, writer's block. So I couldn't think of what to do next. And also accept that sometimes you feel inspired and sometimes you don't feel inspired. I had also been thinking around that time of when I was a little boy, both my parents worked. So there was a family friend who was in her 60s or 70s who took care of me for almost 6 or 7 years, mm-hmm. you know, when I was 7, 8, 9, 10. And I was thinking about her, and I felt like she sent me a message. She's like, oh, if you want, she's passed on. And she said, oh, watch Little House on the Prairie. How do we find that nowadays? Like, it's actually not on YouTube. And I was surprised I had to buy the episodes on Amazon or something like that.
Yeah, I bought it on Vudu. I couldn't believe it either.
Yeah, I guess it's impressive that they're able to control the copywriter, however that
Wait,
happens.
Little side
it's
note.
Not I all just, over YouTube.
Here's a little side note, though. On March 1st, if you have Amazon Prime, all 9 seasons are going on to Amazon Prime for free.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, big news.
So I found I bought a couple episodes. It was super cold where I am, which is in Connecticut. This is in the wintertime. So it was like having hot chocolate and blankets. And I watched an episode. And one, I remembered that, Mrs. Olson's name, Harriet, was the same name as the woman who took care of me. Her name was Harriet.
Oh.
And I also thought about, actually, this is like her parents' generation because she was born in 1915.
Hmm.
And then also when I watched it from an adult point of view, I noticed, like, wow, like some of these storylines, like where Albert overdoses on morphine, yeah. and he's vomiting, and it's quite violent, and everyone in my generation knows that scene. So I was impressed by, like, when I would go to parties and say, oh, I'm watching Little House on the Prairie, and I, do you remember this episode? And they're like, oh, yeah, where Albert's vomiting. And it's like, so, and I was like, wow, we all remember this little scene from our childhood.
It left so really a decent impact, right? It was like,
it was I guess you could even say it was traumatic.
Well, drugs in the 19th century, it's not something that we really thought about. We had Nancy Reagan, you know, Reed and I are about the same exact age, actually. And yeah, we had Nancy Reagan telling us just say no, but meanwhile, Albert's saying yes.
And Albert saying yes, that could be a whole other storyline. Also, I thought there were correlations today with the use of drugs and just, you know, actually the storylines in the show are timeless. I think maybe that's what some of the power in it is. So I just started exploring these. I thought about more of those traumatic moments from the show and discovering the episodes, which is partly probably how I discovered your podcast. But there's the episode where Mrs. Ingalls has a terrible, she's trying to like amputate her leg.
Yeah,
and
she's
like,
tonight.
I mean, I remember that so clearly. That she locked herself in the house, even though she never locked the door, and the preacher came by and he couldn't get in. It was so disturbing. I mean, many, many scary and also terribly funny. Like, I love the Mrs. Olsen storylines. And sure. I also thought about, so if I'm going back to say 1984, so I'd watch Little House on the Prairie with my, the woman who watched me. So we'd watch it probably in reruns around 3 or 4 o'clock. And then in this time period, it would even then air again in prime time. So you could have it twice a day, at least once a week. So it was something we did religiously. And I think I found the idea as a child, like living in that type of world romantic. But also at the same time, I could remember like the commercials that aired during the show when I was a kid and how weird it was, the contrast. And I could remember the commercials too, like in one of the pieces with Albert, I remember the Snuggle fabric softener.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and I thought about, like, I was just, you know, I'm kind of like a tripped out guy. So I was like, oh, what if when Albert, so in one of the pieces that you've probably seen, I actually took screenshots from this episode where Albert overdoses. And I imagine that when he's overdosed and he's being comforted by Charles, he goes on this synesthesian trip illusion where he meets Snuggle, the fabric softener, and actually he lives in this reversed out universe where actually Snuggle is the human being type of character and Albert is the fabric softener, and you have a bottle of Albert you can put in your washing machine.
No,
I don't think I've ever actually explained it that way. It sounds good.
Well, you know what, when you look at some of the pieces that you created that can be very abstract, but when you bring it along like that, you know, you really are describing it in an interesting way. There's one particular one called the Memory Marketplace, which has like the intro with the girls running down the prairie, and in the background you have what looks like a downy baby type of
Charmin
image
for the paper.
Oh, is it Charmin? Okay. And you know, it's just kind of, there's something about it though that is comforting.
It's kind definitely of... that intro and the music, it's so beautiful in the typography. I know we talked about your background in doing design stuff. Like, and back in those days, also the intros were so much longer. But there is something very comforting about seeing that intro and the way it was shot and the freedom of being those girls just trolling through the fields.
And you know, another pieces of your art, you also you find very iconic moments to grab upon. Or touch upon, rather, you know, like, for instance, when the eggs are poured over Nellie's head.
Yeah, I love that episode.
But, you know, it's the crescendo of the moment. And to take that and then create and to expand on it, I think is really interesting. You know, again, I think at first glance, you could look at a lot of your a lot of the art as abstract, but then you really get a lot more the more you look at it. There's one where Mary goes blind, and the Memory Marketplace is the whole marketplace. I'm sorry, but the one that says Mary goes blind, I think, you know, that's a really interesting. I find that to that particular one. That was one of the first ones I saw of yours. That there's something very sad about it, and it's also shocking. I think we all thought like, what would it be like to lose your vision? And maybe Mary was like the first person where it's like, wow, this is all, these are all the steps you have to go through, you know, learning mm-hmm. Braille. It's like, gee, you know, I'm just trying to learn Spanish here. I'm trying to go to Hebrew school and learn, you know, enough to, you know, get by my bar mitzvah. And it's like, she has to learn mm-hmm. an entire thing and she becomes a teacher. You know, it's really kind of thought provoking. I really enjoy that.
Now that you're telling this back to me, so many people are obsessed with Michael Landon, which I kind of surprised about as sort of like a sex icon.
Yeah.
Sex symbol. He's a sex symbol, man.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. His shirt is off a lot, right? And it's kind of a running gag for Walnut Grove Fest. It's like, all right, Charles is, you know, it's the middle of winter, but he's got a full tan. Mm-hmm. And he's glistening and he's, you know, he's in great shape for this. But yeah, he's a complete sex symbol. He's like a Tom Jones of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I spoke to Dean Butler. Dean Butler represents that next, like the need for a younger sex symbol, I think, in the show.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
He didn't say that. This is me saying it. I don't want to get
okay.
any. But. You know, he definitely represented that younger generation because at this point, I mean, Michael Landon is probably in his mid-40s, I would say, by the time, maybe even early 50s. I'm not really sure how old he was.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
So it's kind of like you're losing that demographic. So it's like bring in Dean Butler, who's, you know, this really tall, blonde, you know, great-looking guy, and all of a sudden, you know, you get the younger viewers maybe. And I think it did work to a point. Mm-hmm. It definitely worked.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
But so you went to your childhood to really kind of inspire a lot of these images. Are there ones that you in particular have favorites of?
I love the one where Mary goes blind, and I think about how, as you were talking about it back to me, that actually Mary was the first person that many of us knew who was what you'd say was like alternately abled.
Sure.
I didn't know anyone who was blind. I think that I loved all the episodes that had Nellie. So I love the idea of like someone who was high up and highfalutin being taken down. And I think that was sort of like the ongoing gag about Mrs. Olsen and Nellie was like, they were sort of like the bitch goddess, but they always got dragged through the mud in a way.
Yeah.
But they always came back fighting. So, and I have one. Okay. I think of one that's favorite. It's also a favorite. I wouldn't say favorite. I think that seems sort of like slightly disturbing, but like easy to remember this like moment of trauma from the show that's embedded in my memory. So when Nellie Olsen pretends that she has broken her legs or she's paralyzed and she's faking it, and they have the doctors come in, and all of a sudden Mrs. Olsen's giving her all this incredible toys and love and affection. But Laura knows that she's onto something. So she puts her in the wheelchair, and then she, it's definitely like a rated R type movie. She takes the wheelchair to the top of the hill, and it's this rickety 1870s wheelchair. So it's like, and she pushes her down the hill while her mother's watching.
It's the meanest, worst thing you could do to somebody, especially if you're not 100% sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Many times they could have killed someone, and I wouldn't be surprised if they really did in real life, the Ingalls. You know, I mean, I think that Laura Ingalls Wilder would probably say a lot of these things are sort of exaggerations, but
of course, yeah.
So then later in the episode, when Nellie Olsen has been discovered, and I think about Nellie Olsen as being like this girl of privilege and the wealthiest girl in town, and sort of like we think of it in modern day as like a celebrity who has this perfect life, and then she trashes her bedroom because she's so mad, and she destroys all her beautiful porcelain toys and dolls, and it was so disturbing to see, but also like I could understand how it felt to be so angry mm-hmm. as a child. They wanted to destroy your childhood room. And I think that I identified in a way with that. So I did a piece where Nellie's holding up like this porcelain black.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, actually.
Smash it. Yeah. So that's one that comes to mind.
She looks maniacal. Like she's like, I'm going to destroy
maniacal.
You. I'm also looking at the Albert overdoses one. And, yeah, that, I mean, you're right. It was like the first, it was so graphic, I think. I think that was another thing.
Incredibly.
for 1980s television, we didn't see stuff like that for the most part. At least I didn't. No. You know, I didn't see. I don't think I had stepped into seeing any type of indie films that might have been showing overdoses or something at the age of 10. But it really was a very shocking thing. What type of response have you gotten with Little House on the Prairie as a subject of your artwork?
I find that it's a shared memory, so people all around the world will have something to say, and I can show the work to someone, a friend from Albania, and they'll say, oh, Laura, they know these people. We're all friends with these people. Mm-hmm. So it creates a universal language, and really the only people that don't watch it are the random Americans. Like, hey, I don't want to get in that show. So people maybe that come from religious backgrounds that have left that world don't want to watch that show because they find it very sort of preachy. But otherwise, anywhere you go, Albania, Israel, France, people know, and in Japan, and they know that also the aesthetic of wearing those clothes. And you mentioned people who are hardcore fans call themselves bonnet heads.
Yeah.
A friend of mine told me that when she was around our age, so someone who's now in their mid-40s, as a kid, she begged her mom to make her a Little House on the Prairie outfit that she could wear. And I'm like, wow. Oh yeah, in the 80s, that sort of Laura Ashley aesthetic was actually very Little House. You could kind of see the connection between the flowery, the girls running in the prairie, the intro was actually a way that people sort of dressed when I was a kid. I find that people, everyone knows these stories and the memories, and especially the one about Albert.
I've spoken to Allison Arngrim and other people who have worked on the show, and they look at those outfits as torture devices, just because, I mean, they were in Simi Valley. So it's sometimes, the temperatures would be, my two dogs have snuck up here and they're both freaking out. So if you hear the tip top of, of a miniature poodle and a Maltese, that's just them. I don't know how they got up here. So, they were basically saying, there are times where, you would just feel just retching just because, they're in wigs and layers of clothing. Oh. And it's 95 degrees. It's crazy. Yeah. I think a lot of people forget about the, how right in the middle of California they would be. And I'm assuming they would just work throughout the entire summer. One thing, mm-hmm. though, I think that's transferred very well, I think, to fans is that across the board, every single person seems to convey the love of Little House on the Prairie right from Michael Landon directly to the fan. The amount of respect that he gave the cast during the production is just one of those things where I think that it's shown on film, and I think you taking these moments and not just preserve, I don't think what you're doing is preserving, you're expanding upon it with your own personal imagery. And I think that that's a really great way of showing your appreciation, showing the impact that it has had on your life. I also love the, strange images that the random shots you'll have of Mary where it looks she's kind of orgasmic looking in a couple. Mm-hmm. Which I just think, sometimes when we freeze frame something, we don't get what is always expected, and there's a lot of just using the different levels of luminosity. I just love the way it all just melts together, and I really enjoy the artwork that you're doing.
Thank you.
Are you thinking about expanding into other shows from your childhood?
I've done, yes. We earlier talked about the Love Boat, and so that's something that also stands out in my memory. Or Fantasy Island is in particular, the idea of going to, just the concept of going to somewhere in the world where you can, this reality created for yourself feels very modern. But when I think back to some of the stories, or the intro to Love Boat, where they show the famous people inside of the porthole. So I've been doing a series where I put myself and other people inside the porthole. I think I have one where I put Allison Ingram inside the porthole. Just as a weird
time travel idea. Well, I think she was on the Love Boat too.
Oh, no way. I didn't
yeah.
know that.
A lot of people, Dean Butler being one of them, they actually crossed over and they live, you know, they were in like episodes of Chips and stuff like that.
Okay.
But yeah, Fantasy Island and Love Boat, that was like, if you were famous, you were pretty much on that show.
Andy Warhol was on Love Boat. I remember the
iconic
episode
here, really?
Where, yeah, Andy Warhol, like there's a storyline where some socialite has agreed to be painted by Andy Warhol and her husband thinks it's going to be some hideous abstract piece of artwork, but instead he creates an incredibly realistic, beautiful portrait of her. And
oh my, like I have that. To look that up. I had no idea Andy Warhol was, maybe as a kid
pretty
I didn't know
sure.
who Andy Warhol was.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah, it's like, who's this strange guy? You know,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I love the stuff that you're doing. Do you do other type of stuff? Like what are your other avenues that you touch upon with your artwork? If you could talk about that a bit.
Sure. I like to do all different types of artwork. So another project that I'm working on is I do, perhaps inspired a little bit by this idea of old television shows and commercials, like I do these short internet-based, like 30-second little movies where I'm playing different characters from my own storyline. So it's as if you saw just like a second, or say for example, in these days where you just see a clip of something on YouTube or on Instagram, I'm creating these little movies. Sometimes they're like little funny anecdotes about my childhood. And also I always wanted to be an actor. And I think it was probably something maybe watching Little House on the Prairie. I was like, oh, I wanted to be on a show like that
yeah.
too.
You want
so
to be adopted
now
by the Ingalls.
Yeah, now thanks to the magic of our contemporary times and the internet, like I'm able to make little movies about myself and put them on the internet in a very short period of time. It's a miracle. So I'm doing acting. So in the art world, I say I'm doing performance art. And I'm also doing like traditional things like watercolor painting. Mm-hmm. And I do writing. And I've done some big public art projects. You've probably seen I did a big piece in the early 2000s where I had the word optimism printed on the back of New York City Metro cards, millions and millions of them.
That's amazing.
So every now and then that project pops up again, and there might be something with that coming up again soon.
That's one that'll follow you for your entire career.
I feel like it's a blessing, and it's a blessing. And I used to think it was a curse, but now I don't.
You also have a book that touches upon, it's called 8 Days of Yiddishkeit, which
yes.
is, Yiddishkeit means Jewishness. And so you touch upon your own personal, I guess, feeling. I mean, if you could talk about the book, I don't know what it's about. I'm sorry.
Sure. So
it looks great. Like, I'm looking at the photos. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. I'll send you a copy.
Oh, thank you.
So the Yiddishkeit is the essence of Judaism. But in that, it's hard to explain to a non-Jewish world, but for example, my father was first generation American and his family was from what is now Ukraine, Jewish immigrants. Mm-hmm. And so he spoke Yiddish and there was just like the Yiddish way about things, the humor and thinking about the different words they use, like chutzpah and meshugna and some that I don't hear as much nowadays. But I was thinking about these different Yiddish words that my family used to say, and I was inspired to write little stories about when I would first hear them. Around the same time, I probably inspired in tandem with that. Both my parents have passed on, and my mom in 2014. So when I was going through their things, I found some travel diaries that my parents kept. Mm. And it was amazing. It was like having a movie in my mind of my parents from a time before I was born, where I'd hear about these, they loved to travel. So there's a travel diary of when they went to Italy and to France. And it's like, oh, the chicken was cold. it was like, they were kvetching and like, oh, you know, Istanbul is beautiful, but like, there's nothing like New York. Who are you writing this for? I guess they were.
I've always wanted to come to Israel, but I can't wait to go home and have a bath.
Oh, the radiators. Yeah, exactly. You got it. That's Yiddishkeit to me. It's like this kvetchy, funny, like
that's how my wife is. You know, I didn't grow up with, I grew up with like your basic Yiddish. But my wife, mm-hmm. my wife grew up with real, you know, real Yiddish with her grandparents and her parents. And, so, but being that, you know, Yiddish really didn't really touch upon the Sephardic people much. But mm-hmm. just growing up in New York, I think that, you have to have some understanding of it. So if you go to shul,
yes, like
you know some Yiddish. You have to.
Yeah, if you're a New Yorker, you know some Yiddish for sure.
But, and yeah, it's a beautiful looking book. I would absolutely love to, have a copy. And, so Reed, what is next for you? Do you show your art from time to time?
I do. The Little House on the Prairie work isn't a show that I think is actually just closing today at Mac Mook's Gallery, which is online and in Westport, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, let's see, I do have stuff coming up. I'm in a show right now.
Okay.
Another piece I did was, I have a background in graphic design, so I do a lot of work that involves words or just text. So I did this piece where I took a dollar bill and I had a stamp made on it that's embossed. It says, New York is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it right
now. So that's in a show at Lehman College in the Bronx.
Wow.
Excellent show. It's all different artists who do work around themes of money, and it's really fascinating. So I actually have a piece that's kind of a some pieces that are similar to Little House on the Prairie series that are inspired by Benjamin Franklin. And I think about Benjamin Franklin as a historical figure and learning about him, I think that he would have balked at the idea of a portrait of him being put on money. But also I think he'd be horrified at the portrait they chose of him, because he was sort of like a Michael Landon of his time, perhaps.
I never really thought about that. That's really interesting.
I don't want to love all body types. There's a pot for every, a lid for every pot. So,
you think they could have slimmed him up a little?
You know, he was a swimmer at a time period where people didn't really do that. So he must have been an athlete. He had red hair. He must have been kind of a striking guy with his glasses. But more than anything, he must have had the chutzpah and magnetism. And the portrait of him is just like,
You know what's
so
really
I envision,
beautiful?
I create other portraits of him
I wanted to
as
say,
an art piece.
The crystallized currency that you're doing, that's really, really strange. I really like that a lot. Now,
thank you.
Were you selling the actual artifacts, or are you selling a photograph of?
Both.
Okay.
In some cases, I was selling the actual artifact. In some cases, the pieces that I made were time-based, and I just captured them as part of their evolution. Some of them disintegrated, some turned different colors, some melted, some look exactly the same. But I do have the real pieces in frames. Yeah,
I would imagine they would look really great in like a shadow box or something along those lines.
Yeah, that's what they're in. I think a gray shadow box.
So your website, I just want to mention it. Reed Cipher. Cipher is spelled Seifer. I'll put a link to it in the show notes as well as on my website, and wherever this podcast goes, it'll just kind of follow. But Reed, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about your artwork and how you've integrated Little House on the Prairie, and how I guess you're giving, in a lot of ways, new life to images of your personal past. I mean, these are things in your mind that you're really just passing along. And I think that's in a lot of ways, it's magical, you know?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I don't know if you wanted to, are there any other links that you wanted to mention? Or,
you know, it's not a link, but I have this anecdote I wanted to share with you that occurred to me before we spoke today. When I was talking with friends about these art pieces I made, and they recognized the characters, I do have these friends from Eastern Europe who are from Albania. And I said, you know, because also I've read the books and watched some documentaries about Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Yeah, I love the books.
And,
yeah.
I learned that Rose Wilder traveled all around the world as a journalist, but in particular, she spent a lot of time in Albania. And when I mentioned this to my Albanian friends, I said, this is so random that an American was going for vacation in 1928 or 1929 to Albania. And they're like, oh, you know, we heard this story that like the Prince of Albania was involved with this American writer. And I was like, wow, could Rose, Laura Ingalls' daughter, have had an affair with the Prince of Albania? I think it's possible. It's all alleged.
That's interesting. Hold on. Wait. You just kind of connected something that is so... And I just need to see if... Holy cow. All right, this could... What year was it that she traveled there? Do you remember?
I'm not... I think it's in the late 20s.
Because... All right. This is a weird Long Island type of thing. There is a... There's a huge mansion. It's called the Ruins of King Zog's Ruins. And it's out on Long Island in a very expensive area. And it's essentially what's left over from a mansion that was leveled. And you have to travel. Mm-hmm. You have to hike about 2 miles in to just get there. And when you get there, it's like these 10-foot staircases. It's all derelict and probably pretty dangerous to go to. But it's incredible because in the middle of nowhere, with all of these overgrown weeds, you can see where... these, you know, huge gazebos are, and where the gardens were, and these fountains, and it's really wild.
Wow.
So this is a mansion that was built for the king of Albania, King Zog, in the 20s. And, he was the leader of Albania from 1922 to 1939. And this is something that I've gone there, and I've photographed, and I've done a little bit of research on, and it's just interesting to throw Rose Wilder in the mix of that.
Yeah. So is this a home that was built on Long Island, or was it moved from Albania?
It was a mansion that was built for him, but he actually didn't come here. From what I understand, he never came here because I'm not really sure why.
Okay.
But it was built for him, and he owned it, and then something happened where he lost it. So. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of interesting to throw Little House on the Prairie in the middle of that history.
Yeah, I think the prince was either named Prince Zod or Prince Zog. Prince Zog.
Yeah.
Maybe it was him.
He did rule until 1939, where I'm going to assume that he probably gave up to the Nazis. Not really sure, so I don't want any hate mail.
I think my friends were thinking it was his son that was having a relationship with Rose.
I'm
going to
do a little bit of... I'm going to search for it.
Yeah, check it out.
That's wild. I'd love that. I would love the connection.
It would be great. If it's not true, we could fictionalize a story about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right there. But if you're ever on Long Island, it's a town called Muttontown.
Yeah, where is that place?
It's a town called Muttontown. It's in the Muttontown Preserves. Mm-hmm. And if you just type in... King Zog's Ruins, Muttontown, which, what a lovely sounding town, Muttontown. It's a really beautiful area. And if you're into hiking, it's a nice little hike, and there are trails. It's not, you have to go a little bit off the path, but you know, 2 miles, it won't kill you. But there are these gates it's really beautiful, actually. And there are photographs to show what it originally looked like, and I think there's some type of lore and tales that surround why it was torn down, but I don't have anything to really support that, so I don't really want to go into that. But definitely do check that out. That's I definitely will.
I'm on it.
But Reed, thank you so much. If you ever want to come back on and share any of any updates on the stuff you're doing, or even if you want to review an episode, I'd love to speak with you.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, that could be a lot of fun. But again, it's readcipher.com.
Yep.
And I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Same thing on Instagram?
Yes.
All right. And again, I'll put a link to it in the show notes, and that'll be better.